Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, friends. I wanted to give you a little preview of what this episode is going to look like because it's a little different than some of the other episodes we've done. When we were talking to Kimberly Quinlan, who talked to us all about OCD and anxiety and the line between both, which the episode for that came out on Tuesday, Sam had a realization that she may have experienced some OCD symptoms when she was a teenager, specifically around driving. We wanted to share this episode for a few reasons. We weren't sure if we were going to put it on the main feed or on our Substack, but OCD often goes unrecognized, especially when someone's like functioning through it, right? Sam spent a year convinced she was hitting people with her car, which is a pretty textbook OCD obsession. It's called hit and run OCD. But because she was managing to white knuckle it, she never identified it and never got treated. And we also wanted to share this because we think there's value in hearing a therapist realize they missed their own symptoms. You know, as we talk about a lot on this podcast, we are not immune to mental health struggles, and sometimes you can be the last one to recognize your own pattern. But a quick little disclaimer, Sam is not diagnosing herself in the episode. She's reflecting on what, looking back with her clinical knowledge, and especially after hearing Kimberly, were probably OCD symptoms. And we know that OCD exists on a spectrum and can be episodic. Some people have severe persistent symptoms where other people have a period and it can resolve. But if you're someone who's living with OCD, we hope this feels validating and not minimizing. Your experience is real, whether you had a brief episode or whether you're managing it daily. So we're going to dive into this honest, unfiltered conversation. And as a quick note also, if you could rate and review the podcast, it would truly mean so, so much to us. We are trying to be able to make this be big enough that Sam and I can get paid for it. And you sharing, rating, reviewing it makes such a big difference. All right, let's dive into the episode. We just did an episode with Kimberly Quinlan, who is like an OCD expert and is incredible. And Sam has some thoughts.
I have OCD.
Okay, tell me why you think you have OCD.
So
what does it look like?
I knew when I was a kid that I had like – well, I didn't realize it at the time. Yeah. But I was a very anxious kid.
Yeah.
Which I think could be attributed to the trauma of growing up with my brother. However, when I learned to drive – I went through probably a year-long period where I was convinced when I would drive that I had hit somebody with my car. And one time it was so bad, I was driving to like a church activity by myself. Mm-hmm. It was like a youth activity. And I passed people on the road and my brain had convinced me that I had hit them. Mm-hmm. And I was too freaked out to like circle back and drive past again. So I called my mom.
Yeah.
And I said, "Mom, I think I hit someone." And my mom was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" And so she sent my dad out to like drive and check. And nothing was there. And of course, like nothing came of it. And then I just like kept it to myself and I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And I suffered like that. Like I would think that I had hit another car while I was parking. Mm. And even one time this would have been like into my senior year. There was like a special parking lot where the seniors could park. And they said over the intercom, like, "Oh, can the like owner of this car come like, there's an issue." And I was like, "I think I hit that car." Mm. And I remember like I told my dad, I was like, "Dad, like I think I hit a car." And he was like, "Well,
Right. You did or you didn't.
You did or you didn't. Like, you don't just think that. Like, do you, did you hear a crunch? I think my parents, Lord love them, they had no idea what to do. So they just kind of like, eh, you're thinking fine. And then like moved on.
What did you do, rituals? Did you like replay it over and over again in your head, or how did you deal with it?
I would, well, first of all, I would visualize like the police.
That was part of the intrusive thought.
That was part of the intrusive thought. So my parents sat, our neighborhood was on like this huge hill, and you would like sneak up the hill. And they were kind of on a corner lot of one of the S curves. Mm-hmm. And the road went down. So you could look out, the, we had like beautiful views in all directions. But if you looked out the kitchen windows, you could see like the cars that would have been coming up the hill. Mm-hmm. And I always visualized when I was like driving up that there was going to be a cop car in the driveway telling me that I had like hit and killed a person.
Yeah.
And so what I would do is I would do like the loop back. Mm-hmm. If I was driving, but if I had somebody else in the car, I would kind of just like suffer through it.
Yeah.
But if I was by myself,
yeah,
I would like loop back. Or if I was in like neighborhoods, or if I was in parking lots or any of that, like I would have to have the music like all the way down because I would be like, well, if something happens, I'll hear it. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
And I think in my mind, as you go through school and you learn about stuff, you start to think like, oh, no, I know what that is. But it still kind of will occasionally.
Specifically about driving and hitting someone.
Like if I do a curb check.
Yeah.
I have to like look back and be like, I know that wasn't a person, but I have to see that it wasn't a person. Mm-hmm.
It is so interesting how OCD like picks something super random. A lot of times, like some people just have OCD about like getting HIV and they're like, because they learned about HIV in school and they're just like obsessed with that. And a lot of times what's really interesting about OCD is there are like cultural trends of OCD. Like when we were growing up, more people our age, I'm pretty sure like disproportionately have it, like are afraid of HIV because we were like terrified in school about AIDS and stuff of like that, where I'm sure STDs. Where I'm sure younger generations, because it's like a lot more, you know,
managed and
there's like medicine and stuff. It's not as like, I just remember being like, it's a death sentence. You will immediately get AIDS soon and die.
Your entire immune system is going to cease to function in 24 to 48 hours. Yeah. And as she was talking, it just like the way she described like the ritual and the thinking and how it's like, you can know it's insane, but you can't like unwind from it. And I was like,
well, a lot of times too, people with OCD, which I like loosely get also, is like you're afraid of like hearing other people's worries or obsessions and them like becoming yours, which I definitely – because I read this incredible book, which I actually recommend you read. It's called The Man Who Couldn't Stop. It's like a memoir about OCD, and he actually is afraid of getting HIV, which is where I came up with that example from. But he also goes into like the history of OCD and stuff. It's very good.
I'm trying to – I don't think there's been another episode in my life so far that's like that. But I think if one day I have children, I'm a little nervous now. Because it'll – I don't worry about like turning things off or unplugging things. But when I had a garage, there were times where I would be like halfway to work and I would be like, I don't remember shutting the garage. I don't think I shut the garage. And I would literally in my mind be like, I should call the like main office people, or like who's a friend that I could call that could like go check the garage. And I've been able to like talk myself through that to be like, if the garage is open, the garage is open. Like, there's nothing I can do about that. And me checking, I was able to know professionally.
Yeah.
Like, me checking is not going to help. And so I think maybe because of the work that I do, I've been able to kind of passively, like, navigate it. Because I can't, that period in high school was far and away, like, the worst. I'm having a hard time thinking of anything that I've ruminated on. It's kind of been like little things here and there, but yeah, I think.
Yeah, and I think it like depends on, right? Like I do think things are borderline and it depends like when does it become, right? Like, and I think under different circumstances, yeah, it could have become full-blown.
Yeah.
OCD for you. Yeah. If your parents had been like, oh my God, right. Well, I think it may have become that.
And I wonder if because my parents were like they didn't know what to do with it. And yeah, so I was like, okay, I think I'm like being unhinged, but
yeah,
I didn't know like what to do about, yeah, it. So I just like suffered.
Yeah.
But because as the oldest daughter who was in a caregiving family, I was already good at suffering in silence. Yeah. So I just kind of was like, well, add it to the pile.
Yeah. Mine, like, I don't have OCD, but my like magical thinking and like borderline stuff, anxiety, mm-hmm, comes from like health stuff. Specifically, I get, as you could hear in the podcast, I literally, my daughter's eye is, yes, loosely swollen. And I think every day, when should I go to the doctor? Because,
right,
she's going to become blind. And I feel very, like, it's a lot less about, like, I'm not scared of myself having something happen. It's like, I don't want to be responsible,
yes,
for harming someone else.
Yeah.
Like, I was very fixated during COVID of, mm-hmm, like, I was terrified that I was going to kill my parents.
Yeah, because you gave it to them.
In Florida, and I like never saw them.
But then
I
was,
then I took it on as my responsibility, yeah, to make sure they didn't die. And I would like tell them about, like, I would, you know, be like, make sure, guys, you're doing this, blah, blah, blah. And now, like, with my mom's cancer being back, like, I get very fixated on, like, oh my God, Peyton's going to get sick. She's, yep, going to get me sick. I'm not going to even know I'm going to be sick. My mom's going to, you know, get sick, and then she's not going to be able to do chemo, and then she's going to miss a chemo cycle, and then it's going to come back, and then I'm going to worry for the rest of my life that it was my fault. And if she would have taken that one extra chemo cycle, she would have lived.
Yeah. So.
But I liked when she was like, what's your most compassionate,
yeah,
self say? That was really helpful for me because it kind of like can jar me out of, I think, right, wrong, good, bad. I did, right, it. I didn't do it.
Right. Well, and also the – I think like having – being able to like step out and have the logic,
mm-hmm,
around what's happening, I think that's been a reinforcer for me of like sometimes – and I think this is something that's really underrated and I think it upsets people when they hear it. But like when she brought up like the 100 times a day, maybe 1,000, mm-hmm, times a day, mm-hmm, I do think there's a period of time where you kind of have to just like white knuckle it.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you first recognize what's actually happening,
yeah,
and kind of realizing like, ooh, I am going to be vibrating with nervous energy.
Yeah.
Like trying to ride through these fears and like bringing awareness to what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe I just, because I white knuckled my way through it, I'm forcing everybody to do the same thing I did. But like, it worked. Like,
I do think though, like, I mean, it depends on the thing, but right? I think when you're talking about avoidance, like you have to face the thing. You,
yeah,
have to practice. If you're trying, yeah, to stop engaging in eating disorder behaviors or stop drinking or stop people, but like you do have to show up. Even with all the,
yeah,
the fear and the hesitation and the anxiety.
Yeah. And you have to sit with it. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think
show
that's,
up anyway.
Yeah, that's the unsexy,
yeah,
part. Is I think a lot of people, the reason why they feel so frustrated with therapy is they want to go and have somebody tell them what to do to not feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then when they realize that the key is feeling it, they're like, there's no way that is what I have to do.
Well, it's also so like loose and,
yeah,
you know,
it's not predictable.
It's not predictable. It's not quantifiable.
Mm-mm.
You can't, like, progress isn't even a straight line.
No.
So I think it, you can, and like, even what we're talking about, the white knuckling, like you have to do it for a certain, it depends on the person how long you have to do it,
right,
for before you start feeling better.
Right.
So it's so easy in those moments of feeling discouraged to just be like, this isn't,
yeah, it's not gonna
I'm
work.
Miserable anyway. I,
yeah,
feel the same amount of misery. So why bother?
Right. Why not just keep on keeping on?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild. Well, you heard it here live, everybody. Sam. So, at a minimum.
Yeah.
As OCD features underneath her anxiety.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It is just so funny because I'm sure when you hear mine of like murdering my mom, you're like, obviously not, Amanda. And when I hear you about like killing someone in a car, I'm just like, that makes no sense.
The people outside, you're like, that's not going to happen. But it doesn't matter because in your head, it's going to happen. And I even knew like when I was in high school, I would be like, I remember sometimes I'd be driving, I would like shake my head and be like, you know, there was no one there when you were driving down the road. Mm-hmm. And I started to in my head be like, what would it really be like if I straight up hit somebody with a car?
That is a technique that people do.
Like I literally would have to be like, it would block my windshield. It would probably crack my windshield. My car would be like, other people would stop driving. Like,
have you ever hit anything before? Have you ever been in an accident before?
Well, okay. This is the other interesting thing, too. How old was I when I totaled my parents' car in the middle of Louisiana? That was in early 2023. So I was 32 years old. I went 16 years. I went half of my life with never having an accident.
If you are listening to Sam talk about this and realizing I relate or maybe this happened to me or do I have OCD, please reach out to therapyforwomencenter.com. We have licensed OCD experts, and we would love to be able to help you. We have 4 office locations in the Philadelphia area. We just opened our newest office in Collingswood, New Jersey, and we would love to help you. We also have licensed therapists in 42 states across the country. So check out therapyforwomencenter.com. Which is kind of right. Like, I'm not saying that's not great, but it's I totaled a car early, so I got it over with, and I know what it feels like
because
to hit people.
I think I was so cautious, but then I knew it was a me thing, and it wasn't based in reality because I didn't feel that at all being in my friend's car or when I was driving with my parents. Like, I was fine. I wasn't like, oh, my God, we're going to hit somebody. It was I was at the wheel of the car, and I was going to go to jail for murder. And I knew I wouldn't survive in prison, so I was like – I'll end up shanked. So I totaled my parents' car and we got T-boned on the driver's side.
So did that make it come up for you again, or did it make you be like, oh, this is what it would be like to hit someone?
This is how it feels.
Imagine people jumping out of the car or laying on the road?
No,
it would not good for me to ask you these questions.
Now I'm going to be like, while I'm driving. For me, in my mind, I would be like, what if I missed them? Like, okay, so.
Them walking?
Yeah.
Or missed them where?
Okay, so do you remember, because you grew up in Princeton. You remember those roads, those northeast roads that have like no shoulder?
Yeah.
And people would sometimes like walk on them.
Yeah.
Right? And even like main roads are like that. It's very tight. It's very windy. You can't always see what's going on. So we learned how to drive on a Mario Kart track. And I would sometimes in my head just be like, what if someone was walking and I didn't see them and I clipped them with my mirror and they got their head ripped off and they're dead? This is the first time I've ever like spoken about this really out loud.
There would be
signs.
There would
be
tension.
I know.
There would be blood. There would be blood.
I know.
What would you say to yourself? The blood evaporated, came off the car.
Well, that's literally. Or one time I had kind of an attack like while it was raining and I was like, fuck.
Oh, it rained off the blood. It
rained off the blood.
Some people, Sam, with OCD literally call the police on themselves.
Yes. Yeah. I thought about doing that a couple times. I was like, I have to get ahead of it. Maybe like I'll get. And then I would start asking people questions. This is insane. I literally would be like, I would go to my dad, and I bet he did. The poor guy, he was so busy at the time with work. He probably didn't even know what was going on. I would be like, what's the difference between like first degree murder and manslaughter? My dad would be like, I don't know. Like,
I don't know. What is the difference? Like, I think intention.
Yeah. So first degree murder is like.
It's like planned.
Yeah. You planned it.
Premeditated. Yeah.
Yeah. Premeditated. I think because there's vehicular manslaughter. And when I learned about that, I was like, well, I don't have a record. Mm-hmm. Like I started, and this was like.
You would search yourself for a record?
I would.
I don't know how they would get a record of you if you didn't.
No. Like I would say if I had hit somebody with my car.
Oh, okay.
I would be like, I don't have a pre-existing. Oh,
okay. Yeah. So they like, couldn't find you.
So they would be like, they might give me like, oh, she didn't know. We won't send her to jail.
Yeah.
You guys.
I love that.
If I think back to like that age and things that were going on at the time, I think it was kind of a culmination of intense stress and some traumatic situations that I had experienced up to that point.
Yeah.
Also being combined with like the impending stress of graduating high school and going mm-hmm. to college and like all of those sorts of things. And so if I look at that very unique period of my life, mm-hmm. there were a lot of factors at play that I yeah. think – I don't even know because it's never – it hasn't happened since. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe – again, like maybe I'll have a baby and it'll like reawaken. Yeah. I don't – it might.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was more a situational thing. I don't know mm-hmm. if I maybe do just have this. I probably should have brought this up with Kimberly and be like, Kimberly, for free, please.
It sounds like you're on the edge, and yeah, I think you could have gone there.
I think
that is sort of what a lot of mental health issues are, right? Is like something in your environment
triggers it,
in addition to right, like mm-hmm. what's going on, and then a lot of it is it's kind of like eating disorder behavior or like that's what drives me insane about people just being like you're an alcoholic or you're not, like. Yeah. I think it's a lot of us have the capability to abuse alcohol. I think a lot of us can end up in an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. And what I always say with addiction is what changes it from just being like unhealthy, not a great relationship to being more of an issue mm-hmm. is when you have the experience of this substance is mm-hmm. like the solution
to the problem.
To my problems.
Yeah.
And people can drink the same amount. I mean, it's why people – like people in Vietnam did heroin and then they came back and they like didn't continue to use heroin because they didn't necessarily psychologically bond to it. But mm-hmm. some people were there and they were like, oh, my God, this is what's been missing
from my life.
And then that's, you know, kind of – or similar to like an eating disorder. You know, I think some people start dieting and they're like, this is incredible. I feel high. I can, you know, this is the solution. So I think – you know, obviously OCD is different because it's not something that someone wants to feel or like.
No.
But I think how much you interact with that thought, how bad your compulsions get, how worse it gets sort of is what continues.
Well, and I think for me, humor has been a huge – because this mm-hmm. is like even repeating this back to you, I'm like, you, this is stupid.
Yeah.
Like how would you not know that you whammed into somebody with a Honda Pilot going 50 miles an hour. Like, you would know. But it doesn't – logic is devoid of the equation.
Yes.
Like, when we're talking about this thing. And I think I just – I decided I wanted to, like, share with you about it after because I think, one, it can happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think anybody has the right – just like you were saying, like there are some things in life that it's just the perfect storm and everything mm-hmm. comes together and it happens.
Yeah.
Especially like with you after having Peyton, mm-hmm. right? But also like if anybody's listening to this and you realize you did something wackadoo like that when you were a kid or in your 20s or even now if it's happening, I think part of it is like we have to be willing to be more open about it and mm-hmm. model – speaking about it and how I can have compassion for 16-17-year-old Sam
mm-hmm.
that she didn't know what was going on, but she was trying to prepare.
You cared about being a good person.
I did. I didn't want to.
You cared about not murdering
anyone. One time One time I actually said it to a friend. We were mm-hmm. – so I had to do early morning seminary, mm-hmm. which is like Monday through Friday. I had to wake up at the ass crack of dawn.
Was it connected to like, I'm going to go to hell too for you?
No. Okay. I was just scared shitless going to prison. Mm-hmm. I didn't want that experience. But no, so I would have to do this early morning seminary. And so it was like all my friends – My high school aged friends who were also mm-hmm. Mormon, we would meet up together and then go to school. So there was like eight of us. So in the morning we would meet at this person's house who was in our ward, and they lived like, I think it was like 8 minutes from the high school. So when I started driving my senior year, I could take myself. And I remember one morning everybody was in my car and I was driving. Mm-hmm. And I passed a guy that was like bringing out his garbage cans. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of like laughing, joking, and I was kind of going faster than I should have been. And I realized like in a split second that I had gone past him. And because mm-hmm. he was bringing like his garbage cans to the road, like he was kind of close to the road. Mm-hmm. And my friend Aaron was sitting in the front seat, and I looked at him and I was like, did I hit that guy? And Aaron was like, what the fuck? And I was like, no, like, it's like, ooh, it's not a big deal. Like, I know I didn't do that. And then I spent the rest of the day being like, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Mm-hmm. You would know. You would know. Mm-hmm. Like, and kind of just riding through like those waves of.
Well, that's like a mental compulsion is literally repeat it. Like, that's, God. That's reassuring. You're like reassuring yourself. That's a mental compulsion.
Great. Mm-hmm.
Or like sometimes people, like she was talking about, they're like imagine the thing over and over again. What's fascinating is they found in research that the more you go over the same memory, the more it distorts.
It changes.
Yeah. And then you don't remember what actually happened. So you drive yourself insane.
Because you're like, I can't remember. I can't remember. Exactly. Well, and I saw, I think it was, this was in like a forensics file episode. They said when you're taking, actually when you're looking at a memory, you're technically looking at a picture. And so the more you look at it, you're taking a picture of a picture yes. of a picture of a picture.
Right, because so, a lot of times what we remember is remembering. That's right. Why people who actually talk more and tell stories, like I have a very good memory.
Me too.
Except when I was like in college and I was like a mess, and I also wasn't really in consistent therapy during that time. No. But I think I have such a good memory because I've been in therapy my whole life. So I've been telling stories about what's going on in my life for my whole life.
Oh, well, so guess I
maybe that's one thing you'll get out of therapy if you're in therapy is you'll remember remembering.
Well, guess I have some conversations I need to go have.
With who?
My therapist.
That's fair. Well, we hope you enjoyed this short little episode of us processing, and we hope that you liked the episode with Kimberly. And we'll be back next week.
Yeah, see you then.